We're at the home of Dennis Day, whose name is so very well known to anybody who ever listened to a radio program, watched a television show, or heard a beautiful tenor sing. How are you today?
I'm fine, Chuck. I guess you're referring to the Geritol set, huh?
Yeah.
No, we're talking about anybody who likes good entertainment.
Well, I mean, say, those who might remember radio when I started with Jack Benny back in 1940, so that's...
Was it 1940?
1940, actually, was when I went with Jack on radio, and I stayed with him. I never expected it would last, and I was with Jack for 25 years on radio and television, and associated with him up until he passed away. So that would be a period of about 35 years.
That's a long run.
That's a long run. It's been a very wonderful career, thanks to Jack, who made it possible. And, you know, I actually was out of college when I started with Jack. I was only out of college a short while. And I really started at the top, which was quite a challenge to me. But Jack was the one who took the chance. And,
well, what had you been doing before you started working with
Jack?
Well,
I graduated from Manhattan College, and I'd always loved singing. I was the president of the Manhattan College Glee Club, and I had done... several appearances on a local radio show with Larry Clinton and his orchestra. I was one of those picked from about six or seven metropolitan colleges and universities to represent Manhattan College, where I went to school. And I was on this program for about three times. Now, after I graduated from college, I intended to go into law school because I thought I'd make law a vocation and singing an avocation. I never expected I'd be able to make a living at it. But I was prevented from going into law school because I had an operation. And while I was recuperating, I started singing around local radio shows in New York City. And Kenny Baker left the Jack Benny show, and someone suggested I send over an acetate of a couple of songs I'd done on some of the local radio stations on WHN and CBS. So I did, and by good fortune, Mary Livingston happened to hear the record, and she liked the record. She saw my picture and all and brought it to Chicago to Jack. He came in and auditioned me, and that was the start of the whole thing. They gave me a round-trip ticket to come out to California and audition out here, which I did. And then about 2 weeks before the program went back on the air after the summer hiatus, Jack signed me to a contract. It was a five-year contract with a two-week option. If I didn't make good in 2 weeks, he had the option to drop me. Then in the first year, it was for every 13 weeks, so they would pick me up after the first 2 weeks for the next 11. Then it was every 13 weeks. And I stayed with him, as I say, for the full 5 years. And then I went into the Navy in World War II, spent 2 years in the Navy. And then when I got out of the Navy, I went back with Jack, and I had my own radio show at the same time for Colgate, A Day in the Life of Dennis Day. That went on for 5 years. And then I crossed over into television. I had my own TV show for about 3 years.
Weren't you working with Cliff Arquette?
Yes,
on
we had
that show?
Cliff Arquette, Charlie Weaver.
Yes, that's my boy Dennis. Yeah,
we used to have a great lot of fun. And I was sorry to see Cliff pass away here last year. But I guess that, as the old saying, a good friend of mine says, he's never seen anyone go out of this life alive. So I guess it has to happen to all of us sooner or later. Jack was a great loss when he passed away because, you know, you never thought of him as an older man. He always looked so good. He thought so young. He was always full of ideas of what he was going to do, where he was going. 6 months before he passed away, my daughter Eileen was married, and we sent him an invitation. My daughter sent him an invitation to the wedding. He wasn't able to make the wedding, the church wedding, but he did come out to the reception here at my home. He said, I'll be there, and sure enough, he was out here and spent about 2 hours visiting, and then he had to go to another wedding reception. He was leaving that night to up to Portland to do a concert, and then on to Seattle to do another concert, and then over to Spokane. But this man was a very thoughtful, very kind, and very generous man, contrary to the character that he was portrayed as. It was a great loss because nobody thought of him getting ill You know, there was some talk about him not feeling well. And everyone thought, well, because Jack always took excellent care of himself. He had a physical twice a year.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was doing a concert in Houston, I believe it was, or Dallas, rather. And just before going out on the stage, he got a seizure, cramps in the stomach, and his arm went dead. So they thought it might be a slight stroke, but they examined him, and there was no such thing. But actually, as a few months went on, they finally found what it was, and of course it's very insidious. He had cancer of the pancreas,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And fortunately he didn't suffer very much. He went very fast. But I think the whole nation and the world was shocked when it happened because nobody expected him.
Yes, you think a man like that is immortal.
Yes, yeah. Well, he was a national institution. Yeah. I never heard anyone have a bad word to say about Jack Benny. Everyone always loved him. And he was a very kind and very gentle man. This is what's on his tomb. Here lies a gentle man, which epitomizes mm-hmm. really what Jack Benny was, a very kind and gentle man.
Did you find him that way on that first Jack Benny show?
Oh,
that
yes,
you did?
Yeah, because, you know, I was scared stiff.
Uh-huh.
After all, I'd had no great experience as far as singing is concerned with orchestras or appearing on Here is the Top radio show in the whole mm-hmm. country. And everyone was listening, so I was just very nervous and very scared. And I think that's why they brought in Verna Felton, who played the part of my mother.
Mm-hmm.
It was a buffer between myself and Jack until I got more confidence mm-hmm. myself mm-hmm. on the show. So they used her in the first year, I would say, about probably 16 shows. And then finally I started to get a little more confidence in
well,
myself.
She was on that quite a bit over the years. Though,
yes, well, they referred to her. Many times she wasn't uh-huh. even on the show, but uh-huh. Jack would refer to her, oh, your mother, you know, and I might say something about she wants me to get a raise, or she was always a either a plumber's helper mm-hmm. or a carpenter. She was a woman who could do anything. And he would refer to her many times, or I would. And it felt like a living presence was on mm-hmm. the show.
He was partial to tenors before you came in.
Oh, yes,
in,
he had Kenny Baker, and before that he had, between Kenny Baker and myself, he tried Michael Bartlett for a few shows.
Mm-hmm. Wasn't Frank Parker with
Frank
him
Parker
at one
was
point?
On for uh-huh. about 5 years when mm-hmm. Jack first started in radio, back in the Canada Dry, Ginger Ale, were his sponsor at the time.
Mm-hmm. Why so, the tenor? Why not a...
Well, I guess
baritone.
He liked tenors, and it was good for him, I think, for the characters, too, mm-hmm. that he created. See, Kenny Baker took over Mary Livingston's character, the kind of silly, naive type mm-hmm. of thing, and then I had to perpetuate that same thing after Kenny Baker left the show. So I would talk, yes, Mr. Benny, who, me? Oh, yes, please, and, you know, the silly, naive kid, you know. It's like when I went in Chicago, I went swimming in Lake Michigan, and when I came out, everybody on the beach was laughing. And he says, well, what were they laughing at? Your trunks? And I said, oh, trunks! And we used to have these running things, you know, oh, whatever it would be, all through the years. And that was the fun part of it. Of course, it was a character that I played, and I guess I was, even though I was born and raised in New York City, mm-hmm. I think I'd never been west of the Hudson. And been to Ireland with my aunt, uh-huh. Who took me over when I got out of high school. But I'd never been out west, so I was pretty green mm-hmm. and, behind the ears. I didn't know very much, and I think I was more or less a part of the character that really I portrayed on the Jack Benny show.
Well, it was a great character, and
everybody
and enjoyed it.
They started taking advantage of, after a while, and when I got more confidence of, I used to do dialects during World War II. I used to do Rommel popping out of a tank and, Japanese, arigato gozaimasu, do itashimashite. Oh, you bet you. And we do all kinds of dialects and impressions. I did Parker Fenley from the Fred Allen, howdy, bub. all of these various characters. And then Mel Blanc was on the show.
You had a field day with the show, actually.
Oh, yes,
You did a lot. And what was really interesting to me, as I remember those shows and listen to some of them, you could be as silly as possible
on
the show.
Uh-huh.
And then all of a sudden, Jack would say, sing, Dennis.
And you'd sing a good song.
And you'd sing Granada or into a straight thing.
And the public would accept it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a phenomenon that really, it's hard to explain it, but they did separate the two. The fact that you could have a good singing voice and then play a naive, silly kid, you know, kind of stupid in a sense. But the public always separated that fact. When you say, sing, kid, and then after the song, you go back into the same thing. But actually, all of us, like Rochester, Phil Harris, Don Wilson, we only had about a page and a half of dialogue on the show. But you better believe that it was the best dialogue that possibly could be written. Because Jack knew it was good for himself and for all of the characters on the show. No matter how many laughs, he was very happy with all the laughs you might get. And when the show was over, many people would say, hey, did you hear Dennis or did you hear Phil Harris on the Jack Benny show last night? It was still the Jack Benny show because he was the catalyst who manipulated the whole thing. The jokes bounced off of him. He was the butt of most of the jokes. And we got the laughs, but it's still... He was a genius in that sense.
In many cases, a show would get well underway before he would even make an appearance.
That's true, yeah. That's very true. And then he had a great facility of mentioning something. You know, I wonder where I put that book or something like that, or where Dennis would be, or whatever's going to happen. And all of a sudden... when we were practically to the end of the show, that would come in another roundabout way that made a hilarious ending to the whole thing. He had that great facility. So he was really, in the early days when I was with Jack, he used to work with the writers on all the ideas and the dialogue and everything else. And then when we'd come in to read, usually on a Wednesday or a Thursday, we'd have our first reading. And after the reading was over, we'd leave and go home, and then they would edit it and tighten it up. And my gosh, every time, every script would be 200% better once they worked it over. And Jack would work. He says, I don't like this, I don't like this, we've got to replace this. Or bring in, you know, new dialogue, or let's keep this, and this worked fine. But he was a great editor of scripts. This is one of the great sense of comedy that the man had. Not only was an editor, but what a timer, a master timer. He knew how to milk, how long to milk a laugh, and when to stop, when he had enough, or the public had enough, the audience. And this was a great thing about him. And, you know, now how many other comedians are there around or coming up that have that same facility? So it was an era. I guess someday somebody will write a book about the era, you know, that we went through, through the 30s all the way up into the 50s, the early 50s, when radio was in its heyday. Because everything was gone over the airwaves, you know, it was sound, and everyone could imagine what a person looked like, what a situation looked like, in their own minds, by sound effects and by the person's voice. You know, people used to think I was I get two different kinds of comments on what I look like, people who hadn't seen me. They said, well, one would say I was a tall, about 6 feet, with blonde hair and the hayseed coming out of my ears. Or the other would say, well, he's short and fat. And, you know, so these were the two opposites. But each person who listened to radio formed his own image of what he wanted you to look like, or what he thought you looked like, or the situation and sound effects. I think that'd be make a rather interesting study and an interesting book. You know,
well, that's because the listener participated.
So yes,
he had to supply the picture, and
he had to
added to the staying power.
And the sound effects were all important. I know Jack had a great sense of that. Many a time where it was a slap in the face. I remember once he was trying to get the sound effect man to make the proper sound. It just didn't come, and he kept, no, that's not it. And by George, when the sound effect man finally hit it, the right sound effect of the slap in the face, and Jack says, that's it. You knew instinctively yourself in listening that he was absolutely right. This is a tremendous thing. He was very meticulous about his sound effects. Well, you take the vault, that he had. All those tremendous sound effects with the chains and the alligators, which created in your own mind what the vault in his cellar was. It was just amazing. I don't think you can really translate that. They tried, came off very well, but I don't think it had the same impact as it did in radio when they tried when they put it into TV.
Did you have did you offer anything to the Benny radio show that that wasn't in the script? In other words, was it a likely thing that
you mean
or
to
Phil
ad-lib?
Or Dennis ad-lib or add bits of business to it that were incorporated?
Sometimes you might, you know, but you better be sure that you knew what you were doing. Phil would ad-lib quite a bit, you know, and Jack was a great audience. He just absolutely, if something was really funny, he'd fall right down on the floor. He was just amazing.
You mean literally he would fall on the floor?
Well, he'd just break up. I'm just saying, you know, everything, he'd just break up and almost throw the script away and just put his head down and laugh and just absolutely say, oh, that is funny. Oh, my gosh, you know what I say. He was a great audience. Mm-hmm. And but we didn't do very much ad-libbing, you know, because you had a time structure in there. The show had to be off, and lots of times the audience may laugh a lot longer than we expected they would. So you had to get those commercials in. That was the important thing. And, of course, Jack was the first one to do the integrated commercials way back in the 30s by Jell-O again, and then we went from there to Grape Nuts, and then we went into LSMFT, Lucky Strike, Green Has Gone to War, and all of that. But he always integrated the commercials as part of the program.
One show that stands out in my memory was one where the sportsmen, this is a storyline, the sportsmen were getting mad because Jack wasn't paying him enough money. And so it was you and Bing Crosby and I think Andy Russell.
Oh, yes,
Maybe it was Dick Hames.
And Dick Hames, yeah. Uh-huh. And that's when Crosby said, who picked this key, Dennis Day?
Yeah, right.
And then also another time he says, hey, Dennis, you better get down where the money is. Because here I was with three baritones. Yeah.
There was a lot of fun on those shows.
It really was
fun for the audience, and we could listen and feel that everybody on your side of the microphone was having a good time.
Yeah, well, you went there. You enjoyed it. You know, we didn't rehearse a great deal because comedy loses its spontaneity if you do. You know, then it becomes too rote and planned. And Jack didn't want to do that, never rehearsed a great deal. You may have one or two readings at most. And it had that sense. I always got a great charge out of going to the Jack Benny rehearsals and the shows itself, because you knew you were going to have fun. And everybody did enjoy themselves. I mean, there was no animosity among any of us. You know, we weren't jealous of one another. We all got along just absolutely great.
We all got your star spot on the show.
That's
you really had a good feature.
That's right. Everyone got his feature spot. And you know the material was the greatest. Mm.
Did you have to, did you rehearse, or when you were, a show was going on Sunday, for example. When did it start for you as an actor and a singer on the show?
I'd start
Thursday or Friday.
I'd start at least on Wednesday because I'd have to get with the arranger, pick out the song, talk to Jack and Mary and whatever suggestions they might have as far as the song is concerned. I'd make my suggestions. Then we'd have to get with the arranger as far as key and the routine, and then he'd have to make the arrangement. Then the next time I came in, for a rehearsal with the orchestra was on a Sunday morning, usually around 10 o'clock. I got there, and the cast would probably arrive around 11:30, 12 o'clock. But I would rehearse with the orchestra in my period of time, usually then, on Sunday morning. And that's after I'd rehearsed once or twice, and that was all. Because he'd send the orchestra home. Out. Jack would never let the orchestra sit there to hear the rehearsal of the comedy.
Really?
No, because he wanted them to hear it for the first time, as well as the audience sitting in the audience and the people at home listening to the radios. That's why he loved, you know, Frank Gremley. They always put a microphone under Frank Gremley because Frank was a great audience and he had an infectious laugh. And he'd break up at anything that Jack or any of us would say. So you see, they kept the spontaneity there by dismissing the orchestra. And the first time they heard what was going on as far as the show was concerned, they'd rehearsed their cues for the bridges and things like that. But they didn't hear any of the comedy at all.
And it was evident. We could hear that everybody was really, really with it. It seemed to me that Don Wilson always was, you could almost always hear Don Wilson's laugh.
Well, he had a big, hearty laugh.
But it sounded, I mean, he was part of the action in much of it.
Yes.
And he must have been going through the rehearsal of it, yet his laugh just sounded like he had heard this for the first time.
That's right. We didn't rehearse it that much, so it was almost like new to you.
Yeah.
And I think you got all of us got involved in it and got carried away with it, you know, and enjoyed it.
You probably enjoyed the audience's reaction to
it
as well.
Yeah, because many times you didn't know you were going to get that big a laugh. Or lots of times you would say, well, gee, this should get a tremendous laugh, and maybe it didn't get the laugh that you thought it would. So it was no two audiences ever alike anyway, you know.
Did you have to do a second show?
We did in the beginning until, we did a second show until after the war.
Mm-hmm.
The first 5 years I was with them. We did one for the West Coast and then one for the East Coast. Mm-hmm. You know, that was at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, which would be 6 o'clock Chicago and then 7 in New York. Then we'd come back and do one for the entire West Coast at 8:30 at night. So
at 8:30?
Yes, 8:30 on Sunday night. And we do that show at that time. So it wasn't until after the war that Bing Crosby, I think, was the first one to start it with the tape. And that's when we did go. Actually, well, it wasn't tape then. It was acetate still. You know, they didn't perfect that.
But they started permitting the recording.
They permitted the recording of it and the replaying of it, you know, so we didn't have to do a live show twice.
Did you did you lose the surprise element with the orchestra then on the second show? You must have.
Well,
a little bit.
Jack would change the script slightly.
Oh, he would?
Yeah. He would change some of the gags that didn't go, or if something needed punching up, they would change it. So it was slightly different.
So the West Coast might have heard a better show.
Yeah, and then also Fred Allen would come on between the first and the second show. So Jack would have comment about Allen, what he said, on the second show. So that made a little difference, too.
That was a lot of fun, getting involved in all of that.
Oh, yes.
There was a time when the whole Benny cast did a spoof of the Fred Allen show, and I think it might have been in the same period of time. Then the Fred Allen show
did the same thing.
It was great fun. It must have been, it really worked for the audience.
It did, because Phil, I think he did the Kenny Delmar, you know, Senator Claghorn, somebody I say, somebody knock, you know. And,
and you did the Parker Fenley.
Yeah, and then I do the Parker Fenley, yes. Mm-hmm.
When, it was after the war and into the late 40s then, when you you got your own show.
I started in 1946, and that went through the season of 1951. So I had it for 5 years, and then Jack continued in radio till 1954, and then they reran a lot of them during the season of 1955. But then he went on to television. He switched over to TV, so I stayed with him until 1964. On TV when he had his regular show. After that, then he did specials.
Now, you had, while you were doing the Benny show, you did the A Day in the Life of Dennis Day, and Phil Harris was doing the Fitch Bandwagon, or at least...
Yes, he was doing Fitch, and then he had his own show.
The Rexall,
Rexall
Phil and Alice.
Phil and Alice, kind of
And Jack had no problems with that, with you?
No. It was understood at the time, you know. So that's one of the things about Jack. He would come on my show or, you know, to help plug it or anything like that. And he'd refer to it many times on the Jack Benny show, oh, you got your own show and all of this sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, when he moved from NBC to CBS, Phil didn't go with him. And that's when Phil was terminated as far as the Jack Benny radio shows were concerned. Then they brought in Bob Crosby.
Right, yeah.
So, he stayed with it until the show was terminated in 1954.
Then into TV. Now, once Dennis Day got on television in front of the cameras there, did the people who thought that you were tall and lean or short and fat, were they...
No, I never got any...
How did they react?
I never got any adverse reaction. You know, they still accepted it, that I could be silly and everything else with Jack, and it worked out fine.
That show that you did on TV, was that was RCA Victor?
I was on, my sponsor was RCA Victor, right. And I was live for the first year, and a year and a half, and then the last year we were on film, but of course that was a kiss of death. I went opposite, they put me on opposite I Love Lucy, which was the number one show in the entire country, and I just couldn't get a rating at all, and so that was the end of that. And then Cliff Arquette went on with Jack Parr and stayed with him for quite a few years. And then shortly before his death, he was on the Hollywood Squares.
That's right. During all of this time, you occasionally popped up on the big screen, on the motion picture
screen.
Yeah,
I did a couple of pictures at 20th Century Fox and RKO.
Weren't you with the... was there a Buck Benny movie?
Yeah, that was the first one I was on when I first came out here, as a matter of fact, to join Jack Benny, and that was the first picture was Buck Benny Rides Again. So I've had a very varied and wonderful career.
What are you doing these days?
Well, I do personals. I'll be going to Anaheim on the 21st of this month, to San Diego on the 24th. Then I've got to go to a fair in Washington. And I've got a commercial running for Special K right now. And I'll be going into Chicago on the 26th to visit the craft people and do a little thing there. So I just managed to keep busy.
You went did a little bit of theatrical stuff too, haven't
yes,
you?
Yes, I've done theaters, summer theater, a lot of theater in the round. I did a whole year with No No Nanette, with the First National Company, with June Allison, and I toured with that for a full year. And I do theaters, I've done Brigadoon, I played the old Melody Top in Chicago and in Milwaukee. So between everything else, I managed to keep quite busy. My wife has an antique and a gift business in Santa Monica. So when I'm on the road, I'm her picker. I love to pick out antiques, you know, and find little goodies here and there.
No, we can't put one over on you then. You know all about the...
I've been studying. You learn. You make mistakes, you know, you really do. But you also find some nice things. It's always been a hobby of mine for years, since I've been with Jack Benny. But now we're kind of making it a business as well. So it's a lot of fun.
You've had a lot of fun all through the years, haven't
you? Oh, yes, yeah. Keep busy. And of course, I have to when you have 10 kids, you know.
10 kids.
I've got 5 married and 5 at home. I'm a grandfather 5 times. So,
It couldn't be that... that young Dennis Day with the tenor voice, a grandfather five times.
Yeah, 5 times. So we're all getting old.
You're not getting old. You just get better, I guess. Thank you very much for all of your radio days and the TV things that you've done. We've enjoyed them, and we've enjoyed chatting with you today.
Thank you very much, Chuck. It's been great.